Hi, welcome to the podcast. In this session, we will cover the management of stillbirth. Approximately one out of every 160 deliveries in the United States ends in stillbirth, a devastating experience for women and their families, yet its causes remain poorly understood. In an effort to help prevent stillbirths by improving the understanding of its risk factors and causes, the American College of OBGYN has issued a practice bulletin for clinicians on the clinical management of stillbirth. This podcast will review that bulletin. Stillbirth, one of the most common negative pregnancy outcomes, is a fetal death that occurs during pregnancy at 20 weeks or greater gestation. Fetal losses before 20 weeks are defined as miscarriages. The most common risk factors associated with stillbirth are non-Hispanic, Black race, nulliparity, advanced maternal age, and obesity. Black women have the highest stillbirth rate at 11 per 1,000 births, compared with Hispanic, Asian, Native American, and white women, all of whom have rates of less than 6 per 1,000 births. Stillbirth rates remain high among Black women, even among those who receive adequate prenatal care. This disparity has been attributed to higher rates of diabetes, hypertension, placental abruption, and premature rupture of membranes among Black women. Hypertension and diabetes, both risk factors for stillbirth, are two of the most common medical conditions that occur along with pregnancy. Research indicates that women who have diabetes prior to pregnancy have a 2- to 5-fold increased risk of stillbirth. Obesity is associated with an increased risk of both miscarriage and stillbirth. The risk of stillbirth is 8 per 1,000 among obese pregnant women with a body mass index between 30 and 39.9 and is even higher among pregnant women with a BMI greater than 40. At that rate, it's 11 per 1,000. Obesity remains an independent risk factor for stillbirth even after controlling for smoking, gestational diabetes, and preeclampsia. So that's a clinical pearl. Obesity is an independent risk factor for stillbirth. Multiple gestations are also related to higher stillbirth rates. A pregnancy with two or more fetuses has a stillbirth rate 4 times higher than a singleton pregnancy. Advanced maternal age, that's an age greater than 35, is yet another risk factor for stillbirth, even after taking into account other risk factors like hypertension, diabetes, placenta previa, and multiple gestations. Older women having their first pregnancy appear to be at greater risk than older women who have given birth previously. Okay, now that we've laid down that foundation, let's talk about potential causes of stillbirth next. A significant portion of stillbirths remain unexplained despite a thorough evaluation, and this is according to the American College of OBGYN. The lack of uniform protocols for evaluating and classifying stillbirths in the U.S., coupled with decreasing autopsy rates, has hindered the study of specific causes. In most cases, fetal death certificates are filled out before a full investigation has been completed, and amended death certificates are rarely filed when additional information from the stillbirth evaluation does surface. We do have, however, some known causes of stillbirth. Fetal growth restriction, for example, is one known cause of stillbirth and is associated with certain genetic defects, fetal infections, maternal smoking, hypertension, autoimmune disease, obesity, and diabetes. Another risk factor or another known cause of stillbirth is placental abruption. Cocaine and other illegal drugs, smoking, hypertension, and preeclampsia all significantly contribute to placental abruption risk. Chromosomal and genetic abnormalities are also found in about 8 to 13% of stillborn fetuses. The most common identifiable abnormalities found among stillborns includes Down syndrome, Turner syndrome, Edwards, and Patau. Infections like parvo, CMV, syphilis, and Listeria monocytogenes are also causally associated with stillbirth. Now, an important word about umbilical cord abnormalities. Although umbilical cord problems and abnormalities are frequently blamed for stillbirth, ACOG's guidelines state that other causes should be excluded before making this diagnosis because most cord abnormalities are found in nearly one-third of all normal live births. A stillbirth attributable to a cord problem should have evidence of obstruction or circulatory compromise. After a stillbirth, sensitivity to the family's emotional state is very important. Parents should be given the opportunity to hold their child and perform cultural or religious activities as they see fit. The issue of performing an autopsy is especially sensitive, but clinicians should emphasize that the results may be valuable in planning future pregnancies. Less invasive evaluation methods like photographs, x-rays, ultrasound, MRI, and samples of skin or blood of the stillborn may also help identify a cause for parents who object to a full autopsy. When a stillbirth is diagnosed, a thorough maternal history should also be taken, including obstetrical history, exposure to medications and viruses, and family history. Maternal testing for such things as lupus, thyroid problems, and antibodies to human parvovirus, as well as certain genetic conditions, may provide information that could affect future pregnancies, but the maternal history is of utmost importance. Counseling women on their risk of having another stillbirth may be quantifiable when specific risk factors are identified. In low-risk women with an unexplained stillbirth, the risk of recurrence after 20 weeks is estimated at 7.8 to 10.5 per 1,000, with most of the risk occurring before 37 weeks. After 37 weeks, the risk of recurrence drops to 1.8 per 1,000. Women with a history of live birth complicated by fetal growth restriction, however, have a much higher stillbirth rate of 21 per 1,000 births. Diabetes, hypertension, and a family history of other genetic conditions can also increase the risk. Although there is no surefire method to prevent stillbirths, losing weight, quitting smoking, and abstaining from drugs and alcohol are all lifestyle modifications that women can make before becoming pregnant. Women with diabetes should get their glucose level under tight control before becoming pregnant and throughout gestation. Preconception and prenatal care can also help identify and screen women for other risk factors that may increase their stillbirth risk. Regarding prevention, ACOG states that the use of low-dose aspirin solely for the indication of reduction of stillbirth risk is not indicated due to very poor or limited data. Once again, ACOG does not support the use of low-dose aspirin for the sole indication of stillbirth prevention unless other maternal conditions exist, such as preeclampsia or antiphospholipid antibody syndrome. Okay, as we get to the end of this podcast, let's cover the IUFD workup and which labs are the most useful according to the college. We'll cover that next. ACOG has published guidelines on the workup of an intrauterine fetal demise, which is a stillbirth. Data has concluded that placental pathological examination and fetal autopsy are the two most useful diagnostic tests for the evaluation of potential causes of stillbirth. Genetic testing and screening for antiphospholipid antibodies can also be helpful. Other tests, like infection panels, can be done based on maternal history, but are usually only helpful in about 5% of cases. Karyotype is also important, with abnormal results noted in 8 to 13% of stillbirths. However, chromosomal microarray analysis appear to be superior to karyotype as a result of a lower failure rate because it can be done on non-viable tissue and can identify copy number changes not apparent with conventional cytogenetic analysis. Alright, so as we wrap up the podcast, let's just summarize the ACOG algorithm on the management of stillbirth. All patients should be offered fetal autopsy and placental pathology, with, of course, parental consent. Now, if no clinical clues are evident, then other tests like genetic testing or antiphospholipid antibody screening can be obtained. If fetal growth restriction or hypertensive disorder is suspected, then genetic test, antiphospholipid antibody testing, and fetal maternal hemorrhage testing like a KB test can be ordered. If there's a suspected fetal anomaly, then it's very important to pursue microarray analysis to make sure no chromosomal defects were identified. If the stillbirth happened intrapartum, then testing for fetal maternal hemorrhage is advised, as well as antiphospholipid antibody screening. Well, that wraps up our quick review of the ACOG guidelines on the management of stillbirth. We'll see you next time.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.